Economists have long argued that prosperity is the engine of progress. Lifting millions, ultimately billions, into the middle class improves health, human rights, and democracy. But as we watch China and India begin to do just that, some economists now warn about the consequences of growth. These new consumers are driving up food prices, the cost of commodities, and the use of energy. In the latest issue of Foreign Policy magazine, editor-in-chief Moises Naim argued that the only way the world can accommodate all those new cars and refrigerators is for the members of the existing middle class, Americans to begin with, to change their lifestyle. He's not talking about marginal changes either. So is it a zero-sum game? For them to advance, do we have to retreat? 800-989-8255 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also get with us on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Moises Naim joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program.
Delighted to be here. Thank
and
you.
Is it a zero-sum game?
No, it's not. And it creates huge opportunities for everyone. What it is, it's a need for changing. For patterns of consumptions and behaviors and so on. And also, it's not going to be voluntary. It's not just an appeal to the existing middle class to behave differently. It's that prices will take care of that. Prices will create conditions that will make some of the things that we now take for granted, we're going to think twice before jumping in the car and going to run errands, before we book the next flight somewhere. It's going to become far more expensive.
Before we go to the supermarket, for that example, the prices for food are going way up.
Yes, and recently those prices went up because of there is a financial bubble, because investors trying to protect their assets from what's happening to the U.S. dollar and other currencies are taking refuge in oil and gold and nickel and
other commodities,
all sorts of commodities. But before that happened, there was a structural change. By that, I mean a situation where in recent years, millions of people started eating three times a day, which is in many countries an unprecedented reality. And that may be a metaphor, which it's actually a reality, but it's also true that we are witnessing the emergence of a large middle class in countries in China and India, as you mentioned, but also in places like Brazil, Mexico, Indonesia, Turkey, and around the world.
Yet, for many, many years, that was seen as an unalloyed good, that this was not merely good, this would be miraculous.
And it is good. I think the world is a better place where people can eat three times a day. What that means is that it will require some adjustments. And again, remember that we have a Malthusian alert that has gone on for centuries. You know, Malthus centuries ago alerted that the population would be growing faster than our capacity to produce food, and that will create eventually a collapse of civil society and civilization as we know it.
And Malthus, though, miscalculated. The population has grown many times beyond what he calculated would bring a utter and complete collapse, and growth continues.
And Malthus, like Marx and others, got it wrong because he underestimated technology and he underestimated the price system. So prices are a very powerful mechanism to adjust supply and demand. But far more important is technology. The Green Revolution transformed agriculture and created opportunities for millions of people to have access to rice and to other grains made it affordable and accessible to everyone else. And now we are also going to move into circumstances where there will be huge opportunities for technology to solve problems.
But if prices of important commodities, energy, food, things like that, if they're going up, why is not a first world country like the United States in a far better position? Wouldn't that seemingly trap those millions in China and India below the middle class? Because they're going to have to spend more for their cars and their refrigerators, too, and their food.
But they are also producers. And again, what we are witnessing now with globalization is that what you have is a huge global pool of resources. And yes, prices are going up. And yes, the poor are now in some countries suffering the consequences of steep increases in prices. And that's what I say, and I said in the article in Foreign Policy magazine that that's it's yes, the world can afford a middle class, but it is going to be very expensive, and in the process of going from here to there, there is going to be painful, and there's going to be important dislocations.
What do you see as the most painful and the most important dislocations? Just the fact that we're going to have to think twice about driving to the supermarket?
Well, the first is that the existing middle class in rich countries will have to redefine their consumption patterns. The second is that the emergence of a middle class in poor countries like China, India, and elsewhere is going to create middle class expectations in these countries. So the next thing that happens after you have your three meals a day is that you are going to want better schools and hospitals for your children. You're going to have you want to have very stable employment for you and your family members. And those are very difficult things for the liver. To deliver for governments. Governments have a very hard time satisfying demand that grows very fast for health and hospital and education and jobs. Expectations and needs are raising far more rapidly than the ability of governments to deliver them.
Our guest is Moises Naim. He's the editor-in-chief of Foreign Policy magazine. And we're talking about an article that he wrote, which talked about the arrival, the impending arrival of many millions into a new middle class and what that's going to mean for the rest of us. If you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Jim, and Jim's calling us from Kansas City.
Hello.
Hi there, Jim. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I could hardly hear you, but I'll try to do my best. My concern is that we're talking about the middle class. And I read Paul Ehrlich's book years ago when I was a young man and when it first came out. And everything he said in there has come to pass, except he's about 10 years off. And we're starting to run out of energy. What bothers me is that nobody's got the guts or they won't discuss this, particularly in this country, about the high birth rate, particularly Hispanics, and how in the world are we going to be able to overcome that? That's what I can't understand, because I talk with people and I talk with a lot of Hispanics. It's not even a concern to them.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about birth rates in general, whether it affects Hispanics in this country and elsewhere, specifically, I guess China, as we know. Moises Naim has been working a very aggressive program to try to reduce population growth.
And one of the consequences of the emergence of the middle class in China is that now the government is facing huge pressures to relax its very severe constraint. The one child per couple policy that they have enforced brutally for years. But population is the reason why we're witnessing all of these price hikes is not a sudden spike in population. It's a sudden spike in consumption that started about a decade ago, and that is creating far more demand for plywood and nickel and copper and all the commodities and food.
And why mines that have been closed for many years in Minnesota are reopening, yes.
Right. And again, it this is not population-driven. This is driven by prosperity.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Matt. Matt with us from Walton in New York.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that I think we could have room for the world to have a larger middle class if we in the U.S. made a change to our middle class and our infrastructure supporting it. For example, we transport a large amount of our food over the road, when if we transport it by rail or by some other mechanism, we could transport it at a much lower energy cost, and then the gas hike would not be affecting our food supply as much as it is. I know that flour, for example, has doubled or tripled in some areas in price in the last couple of months. Is astounding, and I think I just wanted to make that comment.
Is that a valid point?
Yes, it's absolutely valid. And again, what I think we are going to realize is that there are some items that are mispriced, that are just way too cheap.
Like
energy. Because we are not factoring in all of the costs that, the environmental consequences.
The carbon footprint.
The carbon footprint. Once you factor the cost of cleaning up, the cost of global warming, and other costs, you will discover that perhaps gas is too cheap.
But if the market doesn't define the price, what will?
Well, remember that there are those are markets that are not completely free. There is all sorts of government interferences, and there are taxes, and there are all sorts of issues that distort those prices.
So they're not really free, and the reason for example, the big discrepancy in the price of car fuel, gasoline, petrol, no matter what you call it, between Europe and the United States. Europe, they tax it a whole lot more than we do here.
And here, probably, once there is a wider agreement that something will have to be done aggressively to deal with environment, it will be inevitable that energy prices will have to be priced in a way that capture some of the revenues and use those revenues to deal with the consequences of climate change.
Easy for economists to say, because they don't run for political office, do
right.
they?
Right. But remember that politicians only react to the signals that the voters do. So the conversation doesn't start with politicians. It starts with all of us.
Matt, no problem. Thanks very much for the call, Matt. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
We're talking with Moses Maim of the Foreign Policy Magazine. And if you'd like to join us again, the number 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Richard. Richard with us from Salt Lake City in Utah.
Hello.
Hi.
Listening earlier, your speaker mentioned that the wealthier nations or middle class are going to have to make some adjustments in their consumption patterns. I wondered what he believed was the most significant alteration in consumption pattern for the majority of wealthy nations.
Well, as I said, energy is going, the way we consume energy, and that has a lot to do with both the way we move ourselves, both in cars and airplanes, but also in the way we consume certain items that are very energy intensive. Recycling will become far more important, and the whole infrastructure of the country will have to be rethought.
Do you think there's a specific area that is going to be hardest for us to change?
There's no doubt that every single one of the things I mentioned is going to be very hard. I am not naive in terms of how hard politically and how difficult this is going to be. But again, reality will eventually prevail.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Richard. As you look ahead towards this, as prices, markets, as all of these things cost more, but again, the cost to the environment, if the price of gasoline, the price of carbon fuels goes up, certainly the price of coal is going through the roof too, and we're shipping an awful lot of coal now to China and to India and places like that. Cars, all these cars in China, people talking about the incredible environmental damage that may result from people rising up into the middle class.
And that is going to be a very important debate in years to come. The debate of who bears the burdens of dealing with the consequences of energy consumption and climate and dealing with climate change. The argument coming from India and China is, well, you had your turn, United States and others, to develop by using very cheap energy
and dirty energy
and contaminating the environment. So now is our turn. And so who will bear the burdens of dealing with environmental change and climate change is going to be one of the most difficult, thorny conflicts we're going to have in years ahead.
Let's talk with Joanne. Joanne with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call. The more that I kind of live in American society, the more aware I become of our tendency toward conspicuous consumerism, if you will. Obesity and waste and trash and just a wanton living style that just, it's really mind-blowing if you sit back objectively and look at it. We really do kind of exist mindlessly, unaware of what we're doing to the environment. I agree enthusiastically with this, with the viewpoints of your guests, but how do we change? It's almost a cultural overhaul, mass attitude change in American society and Western civilization that is really consumed with, you know, not just consumerism, but trivia. You know, we know more about what Britney Spears and Paris Hilton are doing than we do about our political systems and the environment in which we live and how we're taking care and treating the earth and each other. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Joanne. Thanks very much for the call.
There is a very powerful culture that is ingrained that will have to change. And again, it's not going to be changed by appeals to change. It's going to be a change because it's going to be very expensive to sustain.
There's no other choice.
So when you go to a fast food restaurant and the portions that are huge and very often in a large majority of circumstances, an important part of the portion goes uneaten and becomes waste. Well, if that starts costing you far more, you are going to be more careful about the size of the portions that you're going to order and that restaurants are going to offer. Same with cars, same with the sizes of houses, and so on. So there is a tendency to oversize things that is going to be taken care of by prices.
And we mentioned earlier misguided former predictors of Marx and Malthus. And that. Can you envision a technological change that might stave this off or even reverse it?
I have no doubt that as the prices of these things become more expensive, there will be strong incentives for entrepreneurs and engineers and scientists to come up. You know, there must be someone now thinking about ways of providing energy that it's far less expensive.
Moises Naim, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thank you for it.
He's editor-in-chief of Foreign Policy Magazine. Can the World Afford a Middle Class? It appears in the latest issue of the magazine. He was with us here today in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, Aaron David Miller joins us to talk about the elusive road to peace in the Middle East. Stay with us then. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.